Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Skyline studio is a good friend of the program, a good friend of mine, Paris Schutz from Channel 11, WTTW. I don't even know what titles to give you. I mean, you're like everybody these days. They like if it were business cards, you know, you would need the entire, you know, wallet to fill it.
I just go with Chicago Tonight broadcaster.
Broadcaster, okay.
Like you,
okay,
yeah.
Broadcaster.
But
okay.
But we're journalists, so I mean, and right. there's a weight with that word, so I don't want to dismiss that word too.
Yeah, because I mean,
because everyone loves journalists now, so
my fellow enemy of the people,
yeah,
here.
Right.
Well, and I want Paris to come on because this has been a kind of an extraordinary week in Chicago politics, going back to Monday being the last day of filing for candidacies for mayor, aldermanic positions. But, you know, 21 candidates filing for mayor, not all of them real, obviously. But then you take that as the start of the week, and then you finish out the week with Thursday with brown paper covering the windows of the City Hall office of the dean of the city council, Ed Burke. And we still really don't know what this is about.
No, we don't. But I think we can confidently say we know what it's not about. And that is the Mueller investigation and Donald Trump, given Burke's work as Trump's tax appeal attorney for about 10 years.
Which I have to say, you know, kind of some of the national outlets went with
that. It was
interesting. And it bugged me because that's that kind of flyover,
right,
drive-by journalism.
It is. And they took no sort of care to sort of get to know what the story was about or who Ed Burke is. But I guess Ed Burke is only interesting to a national audience, I think, because of his relationship to Donald Trump. But I think we know just from sources that this is not related to his work with Donald Trump. It has nothing to do with the Mueller investigation. It has everything to do with his role as alderman and chairman of the Finance Committee and the various political committees that he controls. We still don't know specifically what they have on him.
No, but, I mean, for example, the law office.
Right. It was not raided.
It was not raided. So that ostensibly would be where the files would be about the reassessment of Trump Tower.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And then I do believe the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago said that it was not based upon a request from Robert Mueller's actions.
Right, right.
But beyond that, here again, so we know the City Hall office gets raided. We know that his 14th Ward office gets raided. It's got to be something about his official duties.
It has to be something about his official duties. And even if nothing comes of this, because I don't think an indictment is going to come tomorrow, although, you know, you never know. But the fact that they went in 90 days before an election,
right,
tells you that there's something serious here that they felt that they couldn't wait on, because you saw the reaction from other aldermen saying typically the feds don't want to influence an election. They don't want any kind of perception that they're involved in any kind of election influencing. But the fact that they went in, and the images are indelible, like you said, papering up the wall, walking out with computers and files of paper, this does not look good. And the fact that it's 90 days before an election means they felt that something was imminent, and a federal judge, you know, okayed their warrant to go in and do this. This is not something that is going to be sort of, you know, taken lightly, I don't think.
Well, and the fact that, I mean, there are ways to conduct investigations, and the fact that this was such a highly visible action versus, you know, a subpoena of records or those kinds of things where,
right,
it's more of a paper, you know, email kind of,
right, thing. Yeah, you almost wonder if the feds wanted those images of the camera crews capturing them walking out. I mean, this was like watching, you know, Law and Order or CSI or some great political corruption movie. I mean, this had it all. And this is the most powerful member of city council, 50 years on the council, who's had his run-ins with the feds before. I mean, 2012, they subpoenaed the records related to the workers' compensation program, which he runs without oversight, out of the Finance Committee of City Council, which is a bizarre thing. I mean, this,
right,
is something that's unique to Chicago, where it's usually an HR function or an executive branch function. And you know, reading the tea leaves, I don't think this investigation has anything to do with that either. Which, you know, we don't know where that investigation is, but there's a lot of questions surrounding the $100 million workers' compensation payouts that he alone, he is in charge of.
Right, right.
So, but I, reading the tea leaves, I don't think it's going to go there. I think there's something else that we just don't know about.
Right, but as you said, and I have to agree, it has to be something serious and potentially something that there's a need for immediacy in their action.
Yeah, right. You're right. They didn't just quietly subpoena records. No, they went right in. And he claims that he doesn't know anything about what they're looking for, and he's going to cooperate fully. And he kept repeating that, as I have in the past, I'm going to cooperate, reminding everybody that he's been under federal investigation before for ghost payrolling, for the workers' compensation. So, you know, this is just fascinating.
Been there, done that.
He seemed pretty nonplussed about it, but this is different. Doesn't it feel different to you?
It does. And also, of course, it's also on the day that his wife, Ann Burke, is being sworn in.
That couldn't have been a coincidence either. I mean, they knew he wasn't going to be in the office.
Correct.
So and so it's kind of poetic, too. I mean, the feds sometimes are not want for irony, you know.
No, they don't like to make it, they don't like to use a flashing neon light to
right.
Light it out. It's like, but you can
some
draw,
subtle little irony.
You can draw your own conclusions here kind of thing. We're talking to Paris Schutz from WTTW Channel 11. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by my good friend Paris Schutz from WTTW Channel 11. We were talking about most recently the FBI raid on Ed Burke's offices. And, I mean, there's significant political impact here. I mean, one, you've got Burke, who probably is still running for re-election, but facing, you know, perhaps the political contest of his life in a ward that has rapidly changed, rapidly grown more Latino.
It's pretty much mostly Hispanic. And even before all this, you saw Ed Burke doing things I've never seen him do. He's going door to door. He's posting on Facebook in Spanish. You know, he's ramping up a full-fledged campaign. And the reason is, you know, Chuy Garcia, now congressman, who has kind of coalesced a lot of power in the progressive Latino community. Chuy Garcia was instrumental in knocking off Ed Burke's brother, who was a state legislator, Dan Burke, with a progressive Latino candidate, Aaron Ortiz. They made no bones that they were coming after Ed Burke next, and they are. And it's interesting what they're doing in this race. So Burke has four challengers in this race. Three of them have direct connections to Chuy Garcia. They worked for him in the county, or they worked on his campaign. And what's happening here is Garcia has put these three people with some of them have pretty interesting resumes out there to see, you know, who is going to be the one that can raise the most money, who's going to be the one that can withstand a petition challenge. So
rather than Chuy actually having to line up behind one person,
he's throwing like, three to the lions and say, you prove yourself to me.
And I'll be for whoever survives.
It seems like a good strategy, because if you just had one person, you know, Burke could find something and knock them off the ballot, and then you don't have anybody. So they've thought about this for a long time. So even before this raid, Ed Burke was going to be facing one heck of a re-election battle.
Now, you take on top of that, there's Burke's various connections with some of the mayoral candidates.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Well, you look at Gary Chico, who Burke endorsed. Gary Chico is, Burke is a mentor of mine. And then Susana Mendoza, who Burke helped get her start in public office. And on Susana Mendoza's website, it said that Burke was a mentor of hers. And then it went down. It said, error, this page is not available anymore. But then they put it back up because they thought it would look really silly if they obviously got rid of
it. It is what it is.
It is what it is. But then Tony Preckwinkle, you know, Tony Preckwinkle is now the head of the Cook County Democratic Party. And Ed Burke hosted a fundraiser for her recently, as she ran unopposed for Cook County Board Chairman. So it's hard for a lot of these candidates to sort of get past their connections to Ed Burke. And I don't think they want to say anything. You know, they want to jump to any conclusions, because ostensibly, if they do win, they are going to have to work with him. He can imperil their agenda if they, you know, if he they get on his wrong side. So they're, right. they're kind of taking a wait-and-see approach, except for Lori Lightfoot, who's saying, hey, this is all the machine politics that I'm running against.
Well, and I do think, you know, if you're running as the kind of the insurgent, an insurgent candidacy, and as we've seen in Democratic politics, obviously insurgents versus establishment or whatever, you know, Ed Burke is as establishment as you're going to get.
He's a picture of us, and he's wearing the pinstripe suit, and he's wearing the fedora, and, you know, as he comes home the other night, I mean, it's right out of central casting here. He doesn't even want to, you know, he doesn't even want to pretend that it's not what it is, old school machine right. politician.
But, I mean, if you are running as an insurgent candidacy, he makes a target.
And
of course, with his longevity, he has tentacles in everybody that's...
Judges, he made every judge in Cook County.
Every judge in Cook County, absolutely. I mean, that's his job, is he slates... I mean, he's in charge of the judicial slating for the Cook County
Democratic
Party.
And through his running of the workers' compensation system, you know, he's got a lot of foot soldiers he could use as precinct workers to help knock on doors and get out the vote. There are a lot of city workers in Chicago, as you know, that owe their jobs to him. So this is not unlike Mike Madigan, you know, an empire with tentacles spread everywhere.
And then there's the tax appeals business.
The tax appeal business, right.
Which there's...
Then there's that. It,
right?
You know?
Yeah, on top of that.
And he's leveraged his position as a city council member to gain clients for his tax appeal business. So it's all... And then he runs three or four campaign funds worth $12 million.
It's an enterprise.
It's an enterprise. And who knows what part of that the FBI is really looking into.
Let's look at the mayor's race now. As I've mentioned, there were 21 people that filed. Not all of them are... I mean, now we're in the... I think we set off the air.
Silly season.
It's the silly season. And it's about, well, who's going to really be able to make it past a challenge, and I believe tomorrow is the start of the objection period.
Right. Yeah, we'll know who's going to get objected to tomorrow.
Right, which I would say probably everybody's. There'll be an objection filed. But this is the silly season where it really becomes the legal circus, and it's about irregularities in the candidacy petitions.
It's crazy. I mean, it could come down to you didn't bind the petitions correctly, you didn't notarize it correctly, the paper has an ink smudge on it. But, you know, what campaigns are doing, you know, feverishly over the last several days is going through every single signature and saying, well, that's invalid, that person doesn't live there, that's not a registered voter, this looks like it was forged. And, you know, we've seen a lot of pages that other campaigns have sent out of Susana Mendoza's petitions, and they looked like they are not, you know, these are going to be signatures that are knocked off. You need 12,500. The interesting thing about her is she's kind of considered a front runner, and she only turned in about twice the required amount, which means, obviously, do the math, one out of every two signatures is going to have to be of a valid registered voter registered at that address that they signed, and that's going to be fraught. I think it's interesting that you saw Tony Preckwinkle show up with 60,000 and Amara Enyo with 60,000. Who knows how many of those are good? I mean, they all have petition gatherers that went out and forged signatures and got paid and went home, and these are going to be thrown out. But when Mendoza only turned in about 25,000, it makes it very intriguing, and she will get a petition challenge probably from Tony Preckwinkle and more, and it could be a battle to just get her on the ballot.
Well, and I had forgotten that, unlike the state sets a maximum of two times the minimum.
You can get
There is no maximum here. So
yeah.
you have a larger margin of error if you get, you know, a significant number.
Yeah, so Susana Mendoza's margin is smaller. Tony Preckwinkle's margin is a little larger. Dorothy Brown only had 25,000. I'm going to predict she's not going to make the ballot at all because, you know, we were being sent just entire pages where they were clearly forged. I mean, these were clearly fake names, fake signatures, not real addresses that showed up as empty lots. I don't know what her operation was thinking, but it doesn't seem likely she's going to make the final ballot.
Although she made the ballot before.
But she has, right.
And it takes somebody to challenge.
It does.
I mean, it's unless there's some prima facie evidence.
Yeah, like, and it costs
like
money.
You only filed 80 signatures
right.
or whatever.
Another campaign has to challenge. In the conventional wisdom, Tony Preckwinkle, it's like there's so many people in this race, and they want to challenge the other people that are in their lanes.
Right.
So Tony Preckwinkle probably wants to challenge, you hate to make this about race, but other African-Americans who could take the African-American vote away from her because she's going to rely on that. As part of her coalition, African Americans, I think public employee unions, the Lakefront Liberal, the old Harold Washington coalition. So and you look at Paul Vallis and Gary McCarthy and Bill Daley, they kind of occupy a similar lane.
Right.
So they might, you know, try to maneuver to sort of hit at each other. So if you're Paul Vallis, you don't want Gary McCarthy in there. You want to go after the more maybe moderate or conservative white working class Northwest Side, Southwest Side Chicagoan.
This is all what's ahead.
It's all what's ahead. It's going to be a fascinating week. Seems like people are really interested in sort of the machinations here, because this is a race, as you would know better than anybody, Rick, that, I mean, this is the kind of thing we haven't seen in 35 years. You know, Daley was like deigned every year. Rahm Emanuel, there's pretty much no doubt, you know, when he came in, it was, you know, he had more money and power and establishment backing than anybody. And right now, it's just anybody's game.
It is anybody's game.
And same for the city council. I mean, there aren't that many contested races, but there are enough to see significant turnover.
Absolutely. And maybe shake things up in a way that we haven't seen.
Well, you have people that are even discussing now, like, what are the new coalitions going to be?
Correct.
The Progressive Caucus, are they going to join up with some of the people that used to support Rahm and Daley and start a new caucus? The Latino caucus or the African American caucus. You have a lot of people that were not very active on city council because they just kind of let Rahm and Daley do their thing, and they kind of put their heads down and focused on their ward and voted the way Rahm and Daley wanted. And now all bets are off.
And now they got to show something for
them. Yeah, they do.
Paris Schutz from WTTW Channel 11. Thank you so much for joining me here in studio this
morning. You're the best, Rick. I would only do it for you. Actually, I'd do it for anybody, but especially for you.
Yeah, except now I know how this works. I know I got an OMI coming.
All right, yeah. You're going to see Rick on the Weekend Review on WTTW pretty soon.
Thank you, Paris.
All right, no problem.